For those of you who, excuse me, don't recognize that last piece I played, you should. It's certainly a lesser-known song off the double album recording from which that was originally done back in the 70s. Most of the stuff off of that little riff I played was done, in fact, most of the songs, my understanding, excuse me, that were done on that particular piece were done on a Fender Champ amp, which was an old school small little like 5-watter that Fender used to make, which I think was originally introduced in like, I don't know, 48, 49, discontinued in the early 80s. Even though they've done, Fender's done a lot of, excuse me, a lot of remakes and, you know, different versions of that. The original one was the one that was used by Mr. Clapton on that recording. And my understanding is pretty much every song on the Lele and Other Assorted Love Songs double album that was released at the time. the original Champ, I think, was a Class A single-ended amp, and as I said, something like 5 watts with basically one control on it. So if you wanted to overdrive it or get distortion, you basically just crank the one volume knob on it and kind of let it rip. That particular riff was done that I did, that you folks just heard, was excuse me, done on an amplifier that the gentleman made for me in California, and unfortunately, this recording platform I'm using to get it into the Audacity is really pretty pitiful. So you folks really cannot appreciate how great that amp sounds. But the amp head is done by a gentleman out in California that runs what he calls Little Dog Amps. And a gentleman's name is Jim Nicholson, and he builds really, really, really good amps. And I had him do me a Champ, which he calls a Champster, using period-appropriate parts, and so it's basically identical to a Champ. He does that with a lot of the old-school amps. He's Jim's definitely one of the good guys, kind of like Richard Goodsell here, who made me the speaker to go with it. So I sort of got two really... very accomplished gentlemen doing some very fine work for me on that, and I really appreciate both of them. Richard's made me a couple of things in the past and is currently working on a box for me now, so I suspect sooner or later I'll be calling Jim in California for another one of these babies in a different format, but the amp is really amazing. Any of you folks who have a predilection for hand-wired special one-off type dillies, I strongly suggest you look up Little Dog Amps on the internet, and Goodsell as well. Both of those gentlemen just make killer stuff with really fine parts, all hand-wired, and both folks are just nice as heck and just some of the finest folks you'll ever meet. So I strongly recommend you checking them out for an old-school tube amp. As I mentioned before, that tune came from Derek and Domino's double recording, Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. For those of you who don't know, that was Eric Clapton's band, essentially, that he got together after, he left a brief tour with Delaney and Bonnie and Friends right after he left Blind Faith. And what he did basically was take some of the guys that were playing with Delaney and Bonnie, particularly Carl Radle, Jim Gordon, and Bobby Whitlock, and basically got him on his first solo record that he did with Delaney and Bonnie, backing him up, a lot of their folks, Rita Coolidge and a lot of really, really famous folks, and recorded that back in this early 70s, in fact, I think it was 1970, in a Criteria Studios in Miami. The producer, Tom Dowd, is also a very, very well-known guy that's worked with Lynyrd Skynyrd and just a boatload of folks in the past and really just does fine work. And as most of you know, a lot of the songs on the Layla recording were done sort of as a backdrop to Clapton's love affair with George Harrison's then wife, Patti Boyd. In fact, the whole Layla song is about that, and so are various other aspects. And the story goes that this particular song was written because Ms. Boyd had requested that Mr. Clapton get her a pair of blue jeans, bell-bottom blue jeans, and so he kind of wrote that song for her. It's just got some really cool dillies on it, nice riffs and stuff. So, just a great little tune. And played on a really great amp. And as again, I have to apologize to Mr. Nicholson and to Mr. Goodsoul for the crappy recording on there. But these guys really do make fine things. So really go check these folks out. Excuse me. And if you haven't heard the Derek and the Dominoes recording, you probably want to go back and check that out. Most folks know Layla, of course, and you know. I debated whether to start off with that and do that, but you really, to make that sound even halfway decent, you really need several guitarists to do that piece. But there are some really good tunes on that recording other than Layla, one I played being one of them, Tell the Truth, Keys to the Highway. They even do a cover of Jimi Hendrix's Little Wing in sort of their own fashion. And it's not like the original, but it's got its own charm about it, and so it's kind of cool. And as some of you may or may not know, Duane Allman of the Allman Brothers got together with Clapton and played on most of the recordings off the Layla album. In fact, all the slide work you hear is Duane Allman, who is arguably probably one of the best slide players to have ever existed. And while there's some really fine slide men out there, Johnny Winter included, and certainly a lot of your old blues guys, Duane was really just the bomb on that thing, and I think the Allman Brothers lost a lot of their heart, so to speak. Not that they aren't a good band without Duane, because they've certainly come up with some fine folks to try to fill the shoes, but Duane was just an amazing guy on slide, just really, really good. So anyway, for those of you who haven't heard the double recording and some of the other tunes off of that, there's some really good stuff off that recording. If all you've heard is Layla off that, you really haven't heard the record. It's got some really cool stuff of it. Of course, it's all on CD and been remastered, and there's a lot of outtakes and jams on a special edition of that recording. So if you haven't checked it out, you probably want to do that. Excuse me. One of the reasons I chose to do that particular tune about the difficulties in interpersonal relationships, which is what that song's really about, and a lot of the stuff off Layla are about unrequited love due to the backdrop of the affair that he was having with Patti Boyd, who eventually left Harrison and married Clapton. But I digress. That's also a very convoluted tale, which is more suited for the folks who were involved rather than me doing hearsay and newsreels on it. So I apologize to both of those gentlemen for that. But the reason I chose that was because of the backdrop of tonight's little soiree on violence, and in particular, violence in relationships. And You know, a lot of folks, I'm sure, have heard the news about, excuse me, partner-related violence and family violence and spousal abuse and that sort of thing. And that sort of thing seems to be pretty prevalent, particularly among folks with a lot of visibility in the media, everything from, movie stars to famous athletes and, music folks and that sort of thing. But, it's certainly not... not limited to those folks. It is unfortunately a much bigger issue than most of us here in the States would like to admit. And up until recently, when I say recently, I say probably the last 10 or so, 15 years, a lot of the authorities sort of took a dim view in getting involved, particularly with spousal abuse, really thinking it's a quote-unquote family or couples issue, and that the police and the government and legal institutions shouldn't be getting involved and, dabbling in private affairs that happen behind closed doors kind of thing. Although lately in the news there's been all these more public displays of violence against partners and spouses and kids and that sort of thing. For those of you who don't know, violence also happens in same-sex couples as well, and so there's a pretty well-documented history of that for both genders being offenders within their respective same-sex partner relationship. And, and so most people think, oh, it's only the guys doing the offending, but it's not. It's the gals, and it's not just guys against gals. It's guys against guys, and gals against gals, and gals against guys, and adults against kids, and, kids who are murdering parents and brothers and stuff. While it's always existed, I think it's become more in your face, so to speak, with the advent of the internet and the popularization of all this media coverage of all these sorts of people doing things they shouldn't be doing, and sometimes in public and that sort of thing. So I think that we're much more bombarded by it, and now recently as if it's some sort of new phenomena, but it's really not. It's been going on for years and years and years, just like child abuse has been going on for years and years and years, and it was just accepted as part of society for a long, long, long time. And it still, of course, happens. It's not as if it's not a thing that happens quite frequently. I mean, those of you who haven't seen some of the documentaries about some of the violence that happens in some other cultures, it's extremely rampant in India and some of your so-called quote-unquote third world countries and some of the Arabic countries. And, violence against in relationships, particularly males against women, is pretty much seen to be sort of par for the course and kind of an accepted phenomenon. And, there's plenty of cases where folks have assaulted women, raped them, beat the heck out of them, done all kinds of, even killed them in some regards, and basically the family pays off the legal folks that are running the village or in charge or whatever, and it's just kind of forgotten. Or the victim's family gets paid some sort of paltry monetary recompense for their victim's suffering, and they're just kind of told to go away and forget about it. It's really appalling to someone in this country, I think, particular. Even though we certainly have our share of that in this country, it's not quite as sanctioned as it is in other countries, some other countries. But I really wanted to talk about more about why I think this is happening, and some of the etiology, the origins, the explanations of this. What I would say is most of the time when folks become violent in personal relationships, people often, you hear the phrase that, love and hate are sort of two sides of the same coin and there's a very, very thin line between them. And I think it's because you're talking about very passionate, human emotions that often run kind of, amok, so to speak. There are as many reasons why violence happens in interpersonal relationships, whether it's friendships or lovers or spouses or, live-ins or whatever, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. There's a plethora of reasons that it happens. A lot of it has to do, in some cases, with folks who have pre-existing mental conditions that aren't being properly addressed. And, so these folks sort of, have a breaking point, or something triggers their switch, so to speak, and whether it's them going out and taking an Uzi and, you know, going postal, literally, at their place of business, whether it's the stock market or, you know, the post office or their office building or whatever, or whether it's, you know, beating the crap out of a spouse or live-in partner or girlfriend, boyfriend or whatever, you know, you never know with some of those folks. And clearly, I think there's a fair amount of, for lack of a better term, generic mental illness going on with folks who do that. Most folks, if they do it one time, particularly if they're in a committed relationship and they're doing it and they haven't, you know, they cross the line between being really upset, angered, freaked out, whatever, and voicing how angry they are and threatening to do this stuff. Once they cross that line from threatening or looking like they're about to or getting very, very angry but calming down and then going off and going over the line, once you step over that line in a relationship, you know, there's pretty good evidence to support the fact that this is not going to be a one-time occurrence. You know, a lot of folks will say, well, you know, I did it because I was stoned or drunk or I was tired, or, you know, and they make up all these what I consider to be, frankly, lame excuses for doing that sort of thing. And certainly there's no argument that any sort of state of intoxication, whether it's from, you know, the so-called Twinkie defense that folks used back in the 80s when the junk food defense, when they were, you know, killing all those people, the guy was killing all those people out in San Francisco, and, you know, I think Mayor Moscone and some of those folks were, Harvey Milk, were attacked, and the guy says, well, I was down on my luck, and I had a bunch of junk food, and so I was sugar high and deprived of, you know, all these good food chemicals, my brain wasn't working correctly, which is probably true, you know, and so I'm really not, you know, I'm guilty of it, but, you know, it's like almost by reason of insanity because of the, you know, the all the sugar crap, the junk food, which has been jokingly known, for those of you who don't know that story, known as the Twinkie defense. I don't know what to say about that, except that really, and who's the person that ate the shit to begin with? You know, so that's like when people say, well, I was drunk, I didn't know what I was doing. Well, that's fine. You probably didn't. But who's the guy or gal that first imbibed the alcohol to a point where you were drunk? And what were you doing getting drunk, having an argument? And if you already had a history of acting out, or you have a short fuse, or you have, you know, anxiety, depression, anger problems, whatever, and you're drinking too and you're getting in an argument, you're a dumbass. I'm sorry. You know, this is like dumber than dog poop. This is ridiculous. You don't want to do that sort of thing if you're having a conflict with somebody. That is like a really bad idea. And I know a lot of times you don't know you're going to have a conflict and things sort of escalate. Something happens and something was originally set up to be really good happens at the drop of a hat and things turn ugly pretty quickly. But, you know, the point you realize that's going on, you just need to remove yourself from the situation. And at the very least, the person on the other side of the coin needs to remove himself or herself from that situation, you know, before it gets ugly. But be that as it may, if it ever gets to the point where someone is actually assaulting you, don't believe that they're not going to do it a second time. The research is pretty clear that if someone is disinhibited enough to take the step to actually physically assault somebody, whether it's a sexual assault or a physical assault or whatever, you can pretty much bet your bippy they're going to do it a second, third, and fourth time. So I don't care how many times they say, I'm sorry, I love you, I didn't mean to do that, I was drunk, I was stoned, I was tired, I was irritated, it's a Monday, it's a Wednesday, it's raining, it's sunshining, it's nighttime, it's morning, it's the middle of the night, you know. You know, as one of my friends used to say, to excuse yourself is to accuse yourself, and I think he was right. So this is really, you know, a heifer hockey excuse for them to try and minimize their personal responsibility. And if they say, yeah, I know I'm responsible, I'm sorry, and it'll happen again, don't believe them. They may think it, and they may really believe it, but I can tell you statistics bespeak otherwise. Generally speaking, if you've got somebody who crosses the line one time, they're going to do it again. It makes it much, much easier to do it a second, a third, and fourth time. Now, that's, of course, assuming somebody doesn't address the underlying issues that they're dealing with by seeking some professional help and, you know, going into some sort of counseling, or if they're having a generic anger management problem, going into anger management training, and if they have a drinking problem on top of that, getting a handle on their drugs or alcohol use or whatever. But they're still responsible because nobody pressures anybody to use drugs. Nobody pressures anybody to eat sugar. Nobody pressures anybody to do anything other than what they do. I don't know anybody that's put under duress of a life or death nature to take heroin or smoke pot or smoke cigarettes or eat sugar or whatever. So, you know, don't even go with there with me. And if you're one of these folks who just you're really poor and you can't afford to eat decent food and you're eating a bunch of crap, do yourself a favor. Don't get into relationships or don't get into arguments in relationships. And when you feel yourself get into an argument and you start to feel the cues, shut it down, move away, remove yourself. You know, that's your responsibility. That is not your partner's responsibility or son's or daughter's or whatever's responsibility. That's your responsibility. And I think that's really a bigger problem we have, at least here in this country, where we want everybody else to do our, you know, nasty four-letter word work. Oh, my God, I said it again. For us instead of us doing it for ourselves. And that is just not acceptable. And unfortunately, we have plenty of political figures, including politicians who promise to do all our work for us, whether it's pay taxes or lower our insurance rates or give us free kickbacks or whatever. And we've gotten used to being what I call pigs to the public hog trough. And there is no free lunch out there, folks. You're going to pay for it one way or another. So don't believe these people. If they're offering to give you something for free, they are generally not being truthful with you at some level. Or they may be giving you free up front, but there's this hidden cost somewhere down the line. You can bet your bippy on that one. If they're not just out and out lying, which, you know, the kind of the old joke about, you know, when do you know when a lawyer is lying? And obviously I know some really fabulous attorneys. So those of you out there who are very honest and wonderful and cool and trustworthy, you know, my apologies for this bad joke. I didn't write the joke, so don't blame me. You know, the old joke about how do you know when a lawyer's lying, his lips are moving? That's my joke about politicians. How do you know when a politician's lying, his or her lips are moving, okay? And again, there are certainly some politicians who are very fair and honorable and trustworthy and blah, 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 but they're a needle in a haystack, in my personal opinion. You ain't gonna find too many of them, especially these days. Holy shoes. My father used to say that we didn't have any statesmen anymore, that we had politicians that acted more like used car dealers and wild. He and I disagreed on just about everything. That was one thing that he said that I was in full agreement concerning. At any rate, if you have someone who has anger management problems, someone who has emotional issues that tend for them to act out in a particular way, right, these folks need to be responsible, and if they can't control their anger or their frustration levels, if they can't control their eating habits or their drinking or drugging, and they're too whatever to get help, whether it's poor, cheap, stubborn, stupid, whatever, to get help, selfish, whatever, then their next best bet is to not get in relationships. But of course, that would never happen because we also live in a society where it's all about me, right? So what I say to folks is, start looking at your partner's, friends, brothers, sisters, whatever behavior. And if you see them acting out on other folks, you can bet your bippy it's only going to be a matter of time before you become the target of their stuff. So start to be very good behavior observers of folks. If you're in a relationship where someone is abusive, I have three words for you. Get out now. Don't delude yourself into thinking it's going to get better, because statistically speaking, the chances are slim and none, right? And I've said that to just about every person who's come in for domestic violence or victims of domestic abuse or partner-related violence or whatever, and they're like, oh, well, she didn't mean it or he didn't mean it or they said they were sorry. I'm like, yeah, I know that, and they probably are at some level, but this is how many times they've done this stuff and how many times have they almost lost their cookies and, you know, they're not going to change. You know, it's like the old saying, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So if they don't get help, if they don't stop drinking, if they don't get whatever, conflict management, communication skills training, whatever, they're not going to change. Do yourself a favor and cut your losses, right? It's not worth your life. It's not worth your health. It's not worth your limbs. It's not worth your stress. Because if you're living in that kind of relationship, you're going to be stressed, right? If you see a coworker, and, you know, we have an increase in the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, workplace violence. You know, you see workers who are showing signs of instability and easily being aroused by stuff, and they get really upset and very volatile. you want to get these folks into counseling, or you want to get these folks out, because there are too many scenarios where folks have, you know, attempted to ignore it and be nice and say, okay, well, I know you had, I know you're having family problems. I know you acted out and broke stuff and went on a hissy fit, and, you know, just don't do it again. Well, you can bet your bippy that that's a prelude to them acting out on people, particularly if they have a history of acting out cruelty to animals and that sort of thing. All the earmarks of sociopathy. If you get a person who's cross the boundary where they're doing bad things to any living animal, whether it's a two-legged one or a four-legged one, it's only a matter of time, right? Sometimes when folks have anger in interpersonal relationships, it's due to, you know, insecurities that they've not successfully handled. A lot of times what I find is that people will get angry and they'll act out at minor provocations because of self-loathing, self-esteem, self-concept problems, self-efficacy issues, and they're afraid. They're afraid to confront them. You know, fear has kept them from looking at them, and so they've attempted to skirt the issues by, you know, acting all macho or acting all uber-friendly, or, you know, if they're a female, acting all seductive, or being uber competent and being kind of quote unquote bitchy and, you know, whatever, so that people don't mess with them. And really, that's a cover up for them being scared witless, right? I have almost never met a perpetually angry, acting out, sort of boisterous, attacking person who didn't have some kind of insecurities, and usually pretty deep seated. And recently I had a person who was getting kind of agitated about an issue, and I said to that person, let me just be honest with you, and please don't take this the wrong way. I'm not slamming you. I'm not, you know, pointing fingers and saying bad dog, or, you know, or whatever. But frankly, I think you're scared. And to this person's credit, they sort of stopped for a minute and they sort of thought about it for a second and looked at me and they said, yeah, you know what? I am scared. And I went, well, good for you. Thank you for being honest, both with me and yourself, more importantly. Let's look at what it is you're saying to yourself that's making you afraid, that's keeping you from facing this stuff. Because once you face this stuff, I think you're going to find that most of the fears that you fear aren't as fearful as you think they are. And that's true for most of us. And I can tell you listeners out there that any time I've been worried about something and thought about it and overthought about it and ruminated it till the cows come home and worked it over in my head and then all like, oh, gee, I don't know if I can face this kind of thing, it's because I'm afraid. And it's, and typically what people do, and I'm certainly, you know, no different when I'm not managing my stuff, is I overthink stuff and I start going down the what-if path. Oh my gosh, what if that happens? What if this happens? And I forget they're just what-if paths, and I start acting as if the what-if is reality. It's not a hypothesis, it becomes a reality. It's the same thing that phobias are made from a lot of times. Right? So you misread people, or you misread a situation, or you start thinking and ruminating about a situation, particularly if you've had a scenario in the past where people have criticized you. So if you're a guy or a gal who has self-esteem issues, whatever, you know, if you were verbally picked on as a kid by your parents or whatever, or you had people that were putting you down who were good buddies or pretended to be good buddies, you know, and you have some kind of complex about something, most people think that it's a weakness to admit that. And my argument is, it's a strength to say you're scared, right? Any schmuck can put on a false face, can put on a persona, right? And I've said this before, that comes from the Greek word which means mask, right? So anybody can put faces on, masks on, and pretend. It takes a real person to say, I'm afraid, I'm scared, I'm feeling inadequate, I'm feeling not good enough, I'm feeling, you know, that I may not be able to do this kind of thing. That takes a boatload of guts. That takes a lot more guts than barking at somebody and yelling and screaming and throwing stuff and pitching a temper tantrum or physically or verbally assaulting anybody. It's the same daggum thing. They're all boundary transgressions, and you folks have heard me talk about that before. They're all boundary transgressions, and they all do nothing but alienate you from other people. And eventually, people don't think of that person as being strong. They think of that person being an asshole. I mean, no offense when I say that, but that's the truth. Right? And maybe they don't confront that person, or maybe they don't, you know, challenge that person, but they don't want to be with that person or have anything to do with that person either. Right? That person has no friends or damn few friends, and usually if they have friends with people who are equally as mucked up as they are, because let's face it, if you got somebody who's really got their cookies together, right, and they got their dough ready to go in the oven, and it's got nice chocolate chips on it, right? They're not going to mess with some schmuck who doesn't know how to cook, right? So you get two people, and I've said this before in relationships, most people who are in pathological relationships form the relationship out of a mutual rewarding pathology. It's complementary pathology. It's like pieces of a puzzle going together, right? So you get one person who has one set of issues with which they're he or she's not dealing, and you get a second person who has a bunch of issues with which he or she is not dealing, and somehow those issues come together, and they allow each other to stay in their respective pathologies. Right, so you get somebody who's uber dependent and uber needy and uber helpless and low self-esteem, and you get somebody who's very dictatorial and very aggressive and very, you know, in your face and blah, 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 blah. That scared dependency person is going to put up with a lot of crap that a normal person wouldn't put up with. And it's like I tell people, you know, who get into relationships with folks like this, and I'll say, you know, please don't take this the wrong way, because I'm not slamming anybody. I'm describing phenomena, right? And the reality is, somebody who's got their stuff together is not going to be with somebody like your particular boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. Nobody's going to want anything to do with those folks, right? And the fact that you do tells me there's an issue here, right? And we need to let, and if your friend or partner or husband or wife or whatever doesn't want to come in to get help, sucks to be them. Let's try to figure out what it is about you that's keeping you in this relationship that's obviously not necessarily in your best interest, right? So, you know, especially this is the third time this guy's put you in the hospital, or this is the second time this gal's, you know, put a bomb under your car and, you know, you were just lucky that you didn't have to be in it kind of thing. Let's really look at why you're in this relationship, right? And please don't call it love, because people who love each other don't do this kind of crap. This is not love. This is sickness. Right, and if you're staying with somebody like that, male or female, same sex, opposite sex, doesn't matter, friendship, best buddies, whatever, if you're in that kind of relationship for the long haul and this person has a history of doing this stuff, no offense, there's something wrong with your butt. You need to get the heck out, or you need to start confronting this person. And if you go, oh shoot, I'm really scared, I don't want to confront this person because, oh my God, they might go off, ding, 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 that's your warning bell. If this person's going to go off and you're afraid they're going off, you're staying with this person out of fear? Are you kidding me? You don't have a love relationship with this person. You have a fear-based relationship with this person. It's ridiculous. It's like these people who tell me, oh, you know, I love God because I fear God. Well, no, I'm sorry. Those are completely incompatible emotions. You can be in awe of God. You can be amazed at how great God is and how wonderful God is and go, wow, that's really cool. But if you're afraid of God because you're scared of the punishment, you're not in a love relationship with God. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. It is a completely ridiculous concept in my personal opinion and in my professional opinion, both as a psychologist and as a minister. And yes, boys and girls, for those of you who don't know, I really am an ordained minister, okay? So those religious people are going, oh, what if there's a shrink I know? Oh, my God. Well, you know what? I'm also one of you, too, so shut the heck up. That's not a healthy relationship with any deity. If you're afraid of that deity, that is not a love relationship. That's a pathological relationship. Fear, you know, respect that deity, be in awe of that deity, absolutely. Be scared of the deity, you need your head examined. No offense. So, same thing goes on with relationships. If you're afraid of your friend, partner, sister, brother, mother, son, daughter, husband, lover, wife, whatever, you got a problem. And if you stay with them willingly, you really got a bigger problem. And the problem is you need to fix what's wrong with you. And once you figure out and you get healthy, I can almost guarantee you you're not going to want to be with that person, because you're going to realize really how messed up that person is, and you're going to wonder why the heck you were with them for that long. So anytime I get people in a long-term kind of pathological, what I call mutually beneficial pathology, reciprocal pathology, I ask both parties to look at what they're doing. It's not, you know, it takes two to tango in these kind of situations, and if you're with somebody and they seem okay, and then they start snapping, and you stay with them anyway, and that person isn't getting help, that person isn't making progress with the help, that person isn't stopping drinking or whatever it is they're doing that they claim put them over the edge, you need to really start thinking about what you're doing in that relationship, boys and girls, because you could be literally putting your life in danger. And if you don't believe me, all you have to do is look at the statistics of people who've been killed in those kind of relationships. It's really frightening. And my whole goal here is not to slam people or even to slam the person who's doing the assaulting or the abusing or the acting out or whatever. My deal is to for folks to, you know, man and woman up to the bar of life, so to speak, and fix what's wrong with you so that you don't have to do that stuff. And if you're a person who's reacting out of fear because it feels better to be angry than it does afraid, and you're right about that, right? Because anger jacks up the dopamine receptors and, you know, as I've said in previous podcasts, it's the feel-good woohoo drug and makes you feel powerful and it gets your adrenaline going because you basically get this fight or flight thing going. So you get kind of high and like, woo, I'm Superman. I can leap tall buildings with a single bound, yada, yada, yada. That's all sweet and wonderful. But if it ain't true because it's a chemical overdose and you feel a need to do that because you got something going on inside, you need to fix what's going on inside. Stop raising your blood pressure. Stop, you know, messing with your hyperglycemic levels. Stop stressing out your blood vessels and your homeostasis of your body. Live longer, happier, healthy, prosper better, you know, like the Vulcan live long and prosper dillies. Great. And do yourself and the people you come in contact with, partners, friends, business, coworkers, whatever, a favor of not having to be scared witless of you and worrying about tiptoeing around what they're having to say around you. I mean, that's ridiculous. You wouldn't put up with that stuff. I mean, put... You know, I know some of you have a hard time with this, but, you know, walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. Put on your empathy hats for a moment. And if you're a cluster B person who typically doesn't have a lot of empathy, kind of pretend like you're not a cluster B person. Pretend how somebody else would be. You know, if you imagine somebody else, how they would be, how a quote-unquote non-cluster B, normal, and I cringe when I use that word, but non-pathologically messed up person, how they would react, right? Or if you want to go back to, you know, if you're a typical Judeo-Christian kind of guy or gal, you know, go back to do unto others as you would have them do unto you kind of thing. And, you know, get out the vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, dilly, because you aren't the Lord, and therefore you got no business doing vengeance, okay? So, excuse me. So to sum up, if you're in an abusive relationship, you need to really look at your own stuff and you need to look at putting a lid on that relationship either by getting the person who's in trouble, whether it's you or the other party or parties in the relationship, help, or you getting the heck out because you are literally putting your life and limb in danger. And if you're a person with kids and responsible for kids, you're putting their existence in danger too, right? Whether you're a man or a woman, doesn't matter. And if you're the person losing their cookies, you need to really face up to your own fear of looking at your own insecurities and stop reacting. Stop being the victim of your own insecurities. And if somebody else helped encourage you to feel like that or a bunch of somebody else's, be better than those somebody else's. Get a handle on your stuff and in a passive-aggressive kind of way, say F you to those people who did those bad things to you that, or called you those names or whatever that gave you the idea that you were somehow not worthy. Be better than that. Transcend them, succeed in spite of them, and thereby getting passive-aggressive vengeance on them in the best sort of way, which is you getting better and leaving them sick pippies behind. And by doing so, increasing your own relationship, increasing your own physical and mental health, it's just a win-win situation, guys and gals. It's a no-lose situation. Is the process kind of painful and time-consuming? You bet your bippy it is, but you got to do it. And there's no substitute. Stop looking for popping a pill to fix your problems, right? Internal problems are not fixed from the outside in. They're not fixed by popping a pill. They're fixed by fixing what's on the inside out. Stop trying to avoid doing that nasty four-letter word, work. Oh, my God, I said it again. Yeah, that's right. You got to get off your bippy and belly up to the bar of work and just do it. Because if you don't do it now, it only gets harder the longer you let it go. This is not like fine wine that gets better with age. This is like cancer. Okay? And cancer's bad. Okay? Quote Mr. Mackey. So, if you have an issue, get busy fixing the issue. Get busy getting on top of the issue. If you're in a relationship with somebody with an issue, encourage them to get help, particularly if they're abusive verbally or physically, but especially physically. And if they're physically abusive one time and they don't get help, you need to seriously consider getting your little patooties out of there because it's not going to get better, statistically speaking. One in a million may never happen again. But do you really want to risk being the odd man out? Do you want to be, or the odd woman out? Do you want to really risk being the statistical outlier that survives these kind of situations without multiple broken bones and contusions and hospitalizations and funerals? either yours and or his or hers, whoever the assaulter is. And, you know, heaven forbid, those of your loved ones, too. So, be safe, be healthy, be happy. You can't do it alone without doing the work with yourself. So, stop popping pills, stop escaping and avoiding, and fess up to what's going on. You'll be happier in the long run. Always be healthy, happy. Check out Richard Goodsell. Check out Little Dog Amps. Check out Derek Domino's. And check out A Pathology and live an awesome life. Till next time, thanks for listening.